Hey, everybody. Welcome to Kotaku Split Screen Podcast, the podcast where we take on video games one painstakingly specific topic at a time. This is Michael Fahey, one of your hosts, senior reporter for Kotaku.com. We are joined by Ashley Parrish.
Hey, everybody.
Ashley Parrish is our super hyper mega reporter. And then we have Nathan Grayson, who's just a guy.
That is true. I'm just a guy. Hello, everyone.
But there's a twist. And that twist is this week's podcast topic is twists. I'm Ashley Parrish. The whole time I've been Ashley Parrish.
Yeah, for every single episode we've recorded.
But before we can get into twists, before we talk about some of the biggest twists in video gaming history, we got to talk about spoilers, because really, if we're going to be talking about twists, we're going to be spoiling some stuff. I'm going to go ahead and throw it to Ashley Parrish to talk us through some spoiler-specific stuff.
We have to obviously put a very big spoiler ban on the latter two-thirds of this episode, because we're going to, like Fahey said, talk at great length about twists. So if these are video games that you have not played before, or you just are anti-spoiler in general, which I know people who are, the latter half of the podcast may not be for you. So, and that's your right. You can go away and come back next week when we talk about whatever it is that we'll talk about. But one of the things I wanted to, as we discuss spoilers and warn you of spoilers, is how do we talk about spoilers in video games? Because it's a little bit different than, say, watching a TV show or a movie, where it's generally accepted that you give people, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks or so if there's like a brand new movie, or a few hours or days when it's a television show, or not, depending on what the television show is. But video games are a little bit different because people experience them weirdly and desynced versus TVs and movies, and such that, you know, people will years and years and years later get mad at you because you spoiled the twist in Final Fantasy VII, a game that's like almost say, as old
always
as
Final
I
Fantasy
am.
VII.
It's yeah. That.
But yeah, no, I think that that's an interesting point, because yeah, like the thing that I think you're getting close to saying is like games are long, like TV show, movie, whatever, like, you know, you can watch a few episodes of a TV show in a fairly short period of time. A movie, you know, you can do in a single sitting. A game, though, like, just by virtue of a lot of games being long, that already changes the, like, means of engagement with them, because yeah, there are so many different ways at that point that a person could sit down and play a game. Some people might marathon a longer game, do it in a weekend. Other people might play it over the course of months or years. And like, no one is going to do that with a movie, right? No one's going to be like, yeah, so I started Citizen Kane yesterday and I'm planning on seeing the ending of it in 2022. Like, that would be an
extraordinary 10 minutes a week. I'm watching 10 minutes a week of Citizen Kane.
No, frame by frame. There's probably a Twitter account out there that's analyzing Citizen Kane frame by frame, but that's probably not even the longest movie. Like, what is the longest movie you could do that? And then how long would that take you?
The Lord of the Rings, like, director's cut editions, the extended ones. Frame by frame.
Yeah. I want to know how long that would take. That would be interesting to find out. Who does the maths? Who does maths? Somebody do the math on that.
Math? I mean, 60 frames per second? Is it 60 frames? It's probably 30 frames or 20, whatever.
Well, like, it's movies, whatever. So it's different.
It's 24 frames per second then, probably.
I feel like we've gotten off topic.
We have.
Anyway, but yeah, like, that's like one half of my feeling on it, is that like games are obviously different. But my other thought is that I think I'm a little bit looser with the idea of spoilers than a lot of people, just because I think that our ability to like really discuss something in depth, especially games that are more like narrative driven or whatever, hinges on our ability to use specific details. And I think that like being able to do that is useful in multiple ways. For one, because you can discuss a work in its totality, including like its themes and what it's trying to say. And also just like that leads to more engaging writing and criticism. Like if I just say, you know, this game is bad or good because it includes like for reasons X, Y, and Z, people are going to be like, well, that's vague. Whereas if I can be like, and here is something that demonstrates that, then already that's like a better piece of writing that's more convincing.
I can already feel where this topic of spoilers is naturally going to take us, and I'm already dreading it.
Oh man, wait, can you spoil it for me?
Exactly, yeah, right? So we occupy a unique perspective, specifically when it comes to spoilers, because sometimes when we write about video games, the companies themselves are telling us this is what you can and cannot, you know, write about in terms of spoilers. And I'm inevitably, inexorably, unfortunately drawn to the discussion about The Last of Us 2 and spoilers about that, because when people were writing about this game and they were putting out their reviews, an entire back half of the game was not allowed to be spoken about because Naughty Dog said, no, you can't. And yeah, it would be a big spoiler, but actually, you know, thinking about it in context now, like, you know, hindsight and all that, it really, I don't think it was too big of a spoiler to mention the fact that you could play through the game as a different person. And as I say this, this is funny because I am intentionally walking around saying,
right, you're like not saying the exact detail of it.
Yeah, because I'm afraid that there are people out there who, like, you know, are looking at that copy of, you know, The Last of Us 2 on their digital PS4 shelf, like one day, and then I'm gonna
to split screen, like their whole weekly ritual is that they just stare at Last of Us 2, not the game itself, a copy of it, while they listen to split screen, and they're like, I don't know, it just works for me, it's fun.
Well, do we want to? I mean, if we want to continue to talk about The Last of Us 2 specifically, do we want to like say what it is? It's really, guys who are listening who have not played The Last of Us 2, it's really not that big a deal.
Yeah, it's really not. I mean, go for it, especially because I feel like you've already spoiled a lot of The Last of Us 2 in another episode.
And plus, you definitely have. Yeah.
And you said things I didn't know about that game.
And besides that, these spoilers leaked like weeks before the game came out. I mean, this was all over the place, wasn't it?
Yeah. I feel like anyone who like really cares or really has been trying, we're probably not going to get any angry fan mail. And if we do, we can say, you listened to the episode about twists. What were you expecting?
In a segment called Spoilers, for which before we started talking, we said, hey, we're going to spoil some shit. But anyway, so the big to-do about that was the fact that for the literally the second half of the game, you could play as another person, as Abby. You don't know who Abby is. I think being able to mention that in the context of the game or in a game review wouldn't have been too big of a deal in terms of like spoiling things or you know, specific plot beats. But it's like we were hamstrung, like people were hamstrung in being able to talk authentically and authoritatively about this game for a review for people who are interested because they were so tied up by Naughty Dog themselves. So it's like, what is a spoiler? What isn't a spoiler? What should we be able to talk about so we can talk about things authoritatively? Because that's why people want to read reviews, because, you know, they're authoritative.
Well, I mean, I think even like taking it a step back from that, I think the other thing to keep in mind here, and the thing that I find compelling about being able to use spoilers in discourse around video games, is that the current kind of status quo prioritizes, you know, just writing about like, is this a good product or not or whatever. And I think part of that is because a lot of games are expensive and people want to know if they should buy things. But I think the other part of that is that we've spent so long having this weird, you know, set of unspoken rules around spoilers that the discourse around video games invariably does not end up focusing on things like themes or what a game is trying to discuss or what a game is about. Because instead, in the absence of people's ability to talk about spoilers and particular story content, people are like, well, then let's talk about the mechanics. Do the guns do the blammos good? Cool. That's video games, y'all. And it's like, no, I think games can be a whole lot more. And, you know, for example, can tell much more compelling stories, or we can discuss the stories they try to tell, whether or not they're compelling, in much more compelling ways. And that allows us to, you know, expands, I think, the medium and just the way that people view it. But so long as we have this like ironclad rule around spoiling things and people being really worried about that, then we can't really do that.
I mean, there's two things. I mean, first off, a lot of the publishers only embargo the spoilers until launch day. They just want to make sure that nothing gets out before the players get their hands on it, which I can understand. And then after that, after launch day or whatever the embargo date is, you can go in there and say, here, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Let's talk about this. I hate writing about spoilers because I hate having to demarcate spoilers. I hate having to give a caveat at the beginning of my article saying, okay, everybody, now warning, we're going to be spoiling blah, blah, blah. if you don't like it, you know, go ahead and miss this or skip it. And inevitably you get someone on Twitter going, you can spoil the thing you put between, you know, behind 20 spoiler warnings.
Is that why you hate it? Is that why you hate like spoiling things? Because inevitably someone will always not listen, or do you just not like doing that? Because I feel like that's
just don't
become
like the process. I don't like having to go, okay, here comes some spoilers.
I mean, that's come part of like polite conversation. You know, we would do that if we were talking about anything. It's like, hey, oh, wait a minute. You know, just in a casual conversation, like, wait a minute, this is spoiling a particularly big point. Do you plug your ears or something like that? You know, I don't think that's too onerous. I just think, but I understand your frustration because inevitably somebody will be like, well, you spoiled this. I'm like, bro, you had every opportunity. We took every painstaking means to let you know that this would happen. And then you still let it happen. And it's not our fault at this point. So I get that, but I don't think it's too, you know, painful to just say, hey, sup.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
It's just everything that comes with it when you put in spoilers. It's the whole, I think there's so much loaded in the spoilers that when I go to type out, hey guys, spoilers, it all comes crashing down on me at once. And I'm like, am I prepared for this? Am I?
Is there a way that you guys have been unfortunately spoiled? Like, do you care about spoilers at all? Or have you had an experience where you were like really let down because either you yourself or somebody else like inadvertently spoiled something for you?
So this is the weird thing for me, in that ideologically, I do not care about spoilers, and I think everyone should just be free to talk about games as they please. But when it comes to particular games that I intend to play, that I'm always like, no, don't tell me about it. Like my girlfriend is playing Yakuza Like a Dragon right now, a game that I intend to start. Ooh. And anytime she's playing it on the TV in our living room, I'm like, I'm just going to steer clear because I want to experience it on my own terms. So I get like not wanting to be spoiled. But at the same time, there's actually like, I think there's science even that backs this. The idea that actually people like spoilers, interestingly. And in a lot of cases, when you have something spoiled for you, you end up in this position where like you experience that piece of media differently, but it's not necessarily worse. Like you know that this thing is coming. And so you can kind of like look around at that piece of media, that game or whatever, and see all the ways that it's sort of foreshadowing what's going to happen. And also like when it gets there, you get to predict it. And predicting things feels good. People love to predict shit. That's why like pop music is popular, right? Because it engages the part of our brain that can predict something and be like, oh, I know that part's coming. Yeah, there's studies about this too. This is fascinating. Pop music is popular in part because there is a mechanism in the human brain that likes to predict things. And pop music is formulaic and predictable. So in many cases, before it even reaches the thing it's going to do, you can already kind of feel it doing that thing. And you're like, yeah, this is satisfying.
You mean like melodies
like
and shit? Like actual music?
Melodies,
oh, cool.
Choruses, yeah. You can feel like, oh, I know what word they're going to rhyme with this.
Is that why dubstep is so popular? Because you can tell when the beat is going to drop?
Can you though?
Yeah, like buildups and drops and stuff like that. Yeah, definitely. I mean, dubstep is kind of old now. And it we're is, all God. Old as a result. But and nonetheless, so like spoilers, I think like if we were to exist in a more spoiler permissive world, I think a lot of people would find like, oh, this is actually cool too. This is fun. This is neat. This is a fun way of engaging with media. It's just different.
Yeah. My spouse actually will start a TV series. She's not they're not much of a gamer, but they'll start a TV series, watch a couple episodes, and then they'll be on Wikipedia reading everything that goes on with the. I'm like,
yeah,
why
my girlfriend
you?
Too.
I'll
like,
do that.
Every single thing we watch, she always looks up the ending. And I like it in some way, again, like this kind of is another representation of my weird conflicted feelings here, because I really like to show her things that I've already seen. And then I want to see her like react to the big moments that she's not expecting, except for that she's expecting all of them because she's looked them up on Wikipedia. And so like, that's a letdown, but it's also like the way that she likes to engage with these things, and it's fun for her, and I get that.
Fahey, have you been spoiled for something that you didn't want to be spoiled for?
I have not been spoiled. Well, actually, no, that's not true. As I was researching this very episode, I was spoiled for some things that I don't even want to say because, hell, I was spoiled for them. Like a big plot twist. Oh, the end of God of War, the most recent God of War. I haven't finished playing it. It came out while I was in the hospital a couple of years back, recovering from my heart exploding. So I've never finished God of War, and I just found out while researching this episode something about Kratos' son that I did not know.
I thought that was really cool, the way that they handled that. Sorry, I'm not going to say just in case for Nathan.
Nathan, do you know the spoiler?
I have not finished starting God of War.
Oh my gosh.
But I also like, this is one of those cases, right, where I don't mind, because the other side of it is there are a lot of things that I know I'm never going to play. And I love it when people spoil those things for me. Like, I love to look up articles about TV shows I'm never going to watch and just read them, both for the criticism and also just to know what's going to happen. Like, I take supreme joy in doing that. I'm not even exaggerating right now. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not upset that I spoiled the ending of God of War. His son is basically, what is it, a giant?
No, his son is Loki.
Oh.
His son is a giant that his wife wanted
to
name Loki.
At the end, he reveals himself to be, Tim Hiddleston?
No, unfortunately. And it's Tom.
Tom Hiddleston? There we go. Okay, yeah. I was like, which one is it?
There is no Tim.
Petition to like merge everybody's names who are Tim and Tom. Just pick one of them. They're the same name.
We'll call him Tom. Good old Tom. Anyway, I think we've talked enough about spoilers at this point. You guys are prepared. If you're going to get spoiled in the next two segments, it's your own damn fault if you're upset about it at this point. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back with one of the biggest and most beloved video game plot twists of all time.
Papa.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to Split Screen Podcast, brought to you by nothing. Nothing tastes great. For the next segment, we're going to talk about one of the biggest twists in gaming. And for that, I will turn you over to Mr. Nathan Greason.
That's me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to do a speed run of my favorite video game twist ever, I think in part because in the modern day, I'm not sure that this kind of twist could happen. I think it is a product of its time in ways that are very fascinating. So I'm talking about the big twist in Metal Gear Solid 2. And depending on what you consider the big twist in Metal Gear Solid 2, like there are a lot of possibilities, but I think the biggest twist in the game is the one that happened before the game ever properly came out, which is that everything that they showed about the game before it came out was like a deception, or at least like it wasn't a lie per se, because most of these things were in the game. But basically for like multiple entire years, like the entirety of like 2000 up to whenever it came out, like 2002, late 2001, the game was depicted as being, you know, a sequel to Metal Gear Solid. Like you played a Solid Snake and you'd did Solid Snake things and you were cool and you encountered characters from the previous game. And like, you know, it was depicted as a very sophisticated, but ultimately like predictable sequel to Metal Gear Solid. And then it came out and players made it past the first couple hours and discovered that they were not going to be playing as Snake at all. That instead they'd be playing as, you know, long blonde haired Raiden for the remainder of the game. And Raiden was everything Snake was not. Raiden was like this, you know, kind of like not traditionally masculine looking rookie-ish character. And like, this is so interesting to me because in this day and age, I'm not sure if somebody could do that. I think at the time, you know, media was a lot more controlled. And so it was possible for a developer like Kojima to pull off this big smoke and mirrors act. And there wasn't going to be like somebody who worked at the studio who would, you know, go on like 4chan or whatever and leak everything. Or there wasn't going to be like people data mining the demo of the game to find all of this extra stuff. Because like they even released a demo that was pretty meaty. And like, I remember playing that demo where you are Solid Snake and you're on a tanker and you just run around and do regular stealth things and have a great time in this like little stealth sandbox. I played that demo like 100 times because I was like, this is it. This is what I want. And I was reading a really good piece of criticism on our site about it last night, written by Heather Alexandra, who is no longer working for Kotaku. But she pointed out that that like opening area where you're playing a Snake is a very comfortable level, not just in terms of your familiarity with Snake, but also in terms of like the structure of it and the weapon you have. And you're kind of like the ease of just, you know, maneuvering through the area and taking out guards and stuff. Like it never really presents you with a lot of friction. It's just a nice, fun time. And then you get into the ride-in parts and the game ramps up difficulty. And like you encounter constant kind of subversive unpleasantness where like you never get to finish off bosses. Something always happens and Raiden just like gets embarrassed or loses. And like Solid Snake in a not very good disguise is with you and he's always doing all the cool stuff. So yeah, it's just like this really interesting subversion that I think couldn't have happened now. Because I think about it like the closest point of comparison is probably Last of Us 2.
I guess so. Yeah. That makes sense.
Which again is this big change in playable character. And the reaction to that is, I think, really illustrative of the difference between our times. Because people were kind of mad about like the Metal Gear Solid twist. It's actually really interesting. I'm going to read y'all some excerpts from when it occurred and how people first reacted. Because like, so first of all, right before the game came out, you know, again, there are pre-release reviews as there are now. And so every reviewer kind of talked around it, right? And so here's a fun one, because not only is it a review of the game when it came out, but it's written by none other than Greg Kasavin, who now writes for Supergiant and helps run that company. Back at the time, he was a reviewer for GameSpot. And so he was like, "This review will not disclose any specific plot points, since you'll enjoy the game so much more if you experience it all firsthand. As such, if you take just one thing away from this review, then it should be this. Do not let anyone reveal the plot of Metal Gear Solid 2 to you, whether intentionally or inadvertently, before you play the game yourself. In fact, you'd even be better off not reading the manual that comes packaged with the game, as it includes more information than you'd probably like. You'll learn how to play the game in context anyway. If you do happen to hear something about the story, don't worry," which is a weird thing to say after all of that. "Even if someone told you what The Matrix was really about, that still wouldn't replace the experience of watching the movie. It's a similar case with Metal Gear Solid 2, a game that can't suitably be described in words, even if its plot twists can." Which, I mean, I think is like a take that's aged pretty well overall.
You can tell these are totally different times because Metal Gear Solid 2 came with a manual.
Yeah, right.
Now I lament the lost manuals. Anyway.
But yeah, so like that was kind of the reviewer, like other reviewers sort of talked around the twist similarly. And then so people played the game, but also like info kind of leaked like right before, like on the, yeah, in this article it says on the eve of its American release, somebody basically said like, yeah, you play as a new character named Raiden. And so I think at the time people were, you know, suspicious, but they're like, oh, I guess this is how it is. Yeah, I really enjoy this. This is from like an old IGN forum post from 2001. They begin by saying this is going to be short and sweet, and they start this post that's like not short at all. but yeah, they're like, "This post is also just explaining how I am annoyed that Konami felt the way that they should make us all believe that Snake was the main character in another Metal Gear game, then all caps, since he has been since 1987, tons of exclamation points, so many of them. The only thing I can think Hideo was thinking is that he was doing something truly revolutionary, throwing this big twist where you lose your main character, let everyone think that the main character is dead, but predictably comes back to life like Snake always does. We're all sitting around at this point thinking, damn, Snake is cool, he never dies." It's all one sentence, which is fun to read. "The big twist Hideo left in the game was that," and then this is a all cap sentence, "we don't ever switch back to the main character. Snake is no longer a playable character after the first hour or so. Good thinking, Hideo. I understand that this game is amazing. The detail blew me away. This of you who just, oh, those of you who just let the snake thing roll on off your shoulders are not diehard Metal Gear fans. Snake and I survived Shadow Moses and all those tough situations before, and I was looking forward to doing it again. Instead, I don't get to play with Snake through most of the game. Oh, well, life goes on, parentheses, without Snake. So for one, this was a very impassioned thing for a lot of people. For two, I have no idea what this person was saying. For half of it, they sounded like they were getting behind the twist, and the other half, they're like, I'm disappointed. Anyway, so yeah, at the time, there was like mixed feelings about it, right? But what I especially enjoy about all of it is that there was this instance of somebody very tightly controlling information in the lead up to a game's release. And then the game turned out to be about the control of information. That was the whole point of like the plot with the Patriots and everything, is that the Patriots were this like AI system that was trying to like control the information in the world because of their fear that the internet would ultimately lead to a buildup of bad information that would like stop human beings from evolving.
Spoilers.
Yeah, which is kind of
a spoiler. Jesus Christ, Adeo.
Yeah, it's kind of a, is it a spoiler if that's what real life turned into? But yeah, so like what I put in my notes is, and I wrote this while a little bit high, which is the way that you should engage with Metal Gear, but nonetheless, MGS2's big twist was wild because it was in service of a larger narrative about the control of information, the Patriots' desire to do so in order to prevent undesirable ideas from persisting. So yeah, MGS2 is about the control of information before it even came out, in a way that it could not be if it came out now, because it's no longer possible to control information so precisely in a time when information is more controlled by a few specific forces than ever, which Kojima and company predicted. Like, that series of ideas is just like, it's really nutty to me. I don't enjoy the way the world turned out, but it's funny to me that Kojima could not control information that way in an age of information control that he predicted. Like, yeah. Anyway.
He's a time traveler.
Maybe.
Poor Kojima.
Who's to say, really?
I'm to say Kojima is a time traveler.
But yeah, I mean, did either of you play MGS2, like ever?
No. I mean, I knew about Raiden and that's all I knew about it. And everybody talking about this now, especially devoting an entire segment to the podcast, like the big twist is like, okay, I'm going to go back and watch a Let's Play of this, because is playing as Raiden the twist? I feel like, you know, hindsight 2020 with, you know, a decade or plus of Kojima games, it's like, it's not so much that playing the guy is the twist, is whatever crazy shit Kojima gets him up to is like, what's the real like moment of those games. So I'm interested to see whatever crazy shit Kojima gets up to in this game to see, you know, what's going on and why is it a big deal the way that it is.
I played the game briefly. I got to the Raiden twist. I didn't get to know Raiden well enough. I played him later on in Revengeance. Revengeance? Was that the name of the game?
I think it was, yeah.
Metal Gear Solid Revengeance.
Yeah, that game's amazing. So
it is an amazing game. So that's the Raiden I know. I don't know the less cocksure. I just wanted to use the term cocksure.
Yeah,
because he has his hands over his penis.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask,
is that the one where you see the guy like walking around cupping his dick because he's trying to hide it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only is he cupping his dick the entire time in that segment, but it also severely restricts his ability to do anything.
Yeah.
So you like can't take out soldiers anymore because you're too busy covering your dick.
Doesn't he also like do this like weird like scissor kick in the air? Like his hands is also over his penis. Like I have a distinct memory of watching some part of this game. Maybe it was a speedrun where he's like naked and he does like this weird like cartwheel, but his hands are still on his penis.
Yeah, he can do that weird cartwheel thing all throughout the game. And so you try to do it when he's in that segment and he can still do it just while covering his dick.
So what we need to do is a remake of the game where Solid Snake actually takes on Raiden's role. And you know he wouldn't be covering his junk up if he's fighting guys.
Well, that's like the point of the game, right? Or one of the points is that Raiden is supposed to be the antithesis of Solid Snake in a way that makes you question why you want to be like Solid Snake, mm-hmm. why you want to be this like super soldier who, you know, seems badass, but also like has been embroiled in all these conflicts and like is kind of, you know, like why do we gravitate toward people who like do mass murders? And then, so like they made Raiden kind of like whiny and wimpy and embarrassing. And that's what the game was like going for in a way that, again, like I think would not necessarily, like, Kojima's probably the only person who could still get away with doing that in AAA games, because some of Raiden's segments were fundamentally, like, not that fun. They were unpleasant and awkward, and you came away being like, there was so much denied gratification there. But again, that was like Snake being like, why did you want a sequel? Why did you want a game that was going to be similar to the last one? And then saying like, well, I'm going to subvert your expectations now. I'm going to give you a game that you think is going to be the same. But in reality, it's very different and you may not love it. Actually, I want to finish the segment on a quote from Kojima that absolutely encapsulates that entire mentality, because I love this quote. So Kojima basically was talking about, like, in the aftermath of everything, about the twist. And he said, some members of the team expressed concern that players would want to play Solid Snake throughout the entire sequel. But Kojima says, oh, this is the intro. Kojima says he was determined to bring a secret new character to the game. And this is the quote. Was I scared that people might not be happy about the new character? Not really, he says. In a sequel, you have to meet people's expectations, but you also sort of have to go against them and deceive them, I think. This is my Metal Gear, and I can destroy it if I want to. All right, fuck yeah.
And then he follows this up by making Metal Gear Solid 3, which, in my opinion, is the best of all of them. So, he knows what the fuck he's doing, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So that's MGS 2, a game that subverted a lot of expectations and now lives on in both infamy and, I think, is a lot more revered now than it was at the time.
And it's a game that kind of embodies the whole idea of plot twists in gaming. It's the first thing we think of. But there are other games we think of when we think of plot twists in gaming. And we're going to talk about some of those after the break. We're never coming back from this break.
I think
if that was just the end, that's our twist ending. We just don't come back.
Okay, we're actually back. It was a twist.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back for our final segment of Video Game Plot Twist on the Kotaku Split Screen podcast. It's time for bullet points. Guys, you're supposed to all do it.
No, the name of the segment was supposed to be Bullet Twists, which actually sounds like a pastry they would sell at an NRA convention.
Bullet Twists would be good. It's kind of like Wanted, that movie with based on the comic book with Angelina Jolie.
Oh, the person who can, like, curve bullets curve or whatever. Bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's bullet points, but the bullets are curved. What I'm going to do here in this segment is get to it. Just get to the segment this time instead of talking for an hour. What I'm going to do in this segment is I'm going to list some popular, maybe not popular, maybe obscure. It could be either plot twists in video games. I'm going to describe the plot twist and you guys are in charge of telling me what video game it is. I have assembled 9 of these because that's the thing I do. I mean, I guess if I went for 10 one day, it would be a twist, but I did not. That's the twist. I didn't bother. So let's start off right away. Bullet points, bullet twists, bullet. God damn it, Ashley, you're in my head now.
My goal is progressing nicely.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Our very first bullet point, the princess turns out to be in a completely different area than the one you think she is.
I feel like with you, Fahey, it's actually not going to be what it's supposed to be, and it's going to be something else, but I can't think of anything else it could be.
Or is it?
Okay, let's just do the guess. It's Mario.
It's Super Mario Brothers. Yes, we're starting off with an easy one. Aww. A simple one. One of the most iconic, one of the first twists in video games, really. Imagine, you know, playing that game and going, what? She's in another castle? Imagine being shocked.
I did
by
all that work for nothing.
Holy crap.
People, everybody quit the game.
Anymore.
Nobody has played beyond the first level of Super Mario Brothers. Or of Mario Brothers.
They leave the bar where the arcade machine was. Okay, second one. Second bullet point twist time thing. God damn it, Ashley. Your kidnapped son ends up being an evil old man.
Okay, I really like this idea.
I do too.
Your kidnapped son ends up being an evil old man.
Kidnapped that sounds like Fallout 4? Is that Fallout 4?
Ding, 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 ding. Ashley got it right. Nathan, have you not played Fallout 4?
I have played it, but not that far in the game. I actually wrote a piece for Kotaku.com many years ago about how disappointed I was with Fallout 4. And
maybe if you'd gotten to that twist, you wouldn't have been.
Whoa. But probably not. We'll get that game wasn't very good.
Let's get to the next one. The Phoenix Down. It does nothing.
Final Fantasy VII.
Final Fantasy VII. Yeah, you guys mentioned it earlier in the podcast.
I like that, though. That was a good way of putting it.
That
is a good way.
We have things that can heal, bring people back from death, but in this particular instance, that does not do anything.
Maybe in the remake, that's what they'll do. Like, it already seems like the story is going to veer off course in that particular way, so maybe it'll just be like, wait a minute, we have Phoenix down. Why? There we go. Okay.
Wake up. She's fine. She's okay. Thanks. Okay, here's another one that we may have mentioned earlier in the podcast. Jerks. Mm. Oh no, you were the space bad guy the whole time.
Oh yeah, Last of Us.
The space bad guy.
Yeah, Last of Us.
You fucker.
Honestly, Metroid.
No. You guys know what this is. Come on.
You're just... Anyway, it's Star Wars KOTOR.
You're just what? What were you going to say?
Well, you mentioned that before the episode, before we started recording the episode, before Ash got here.
Yeah, I had no way of knowing.
Yeah.
Okay,
anyway,
fine.
Yeah, it's by the way. But yeah.
There's a girl in that there armor.
Oh, Metroid.
Very good.
I'm trying to think if there are other games where that happens,
First, though,
too.
I wanted to go back to KOTOR because I feel like that was a really good twist that I still feel like, I don't know. I think even in terms of like overall twist, maybe KOTOR 2 is better. I think KOTOR 2 is the better story.
Really?
Yeah. Having like Kreia end up being kind of the villain after she's been your sort of like bifurcated conscious the entire time, where you've been like, is the light side really the light side? Is the dark side really a bad thing? Like,
does the hot side stay hot? Does the cool side stay cool?
Yeah, or maybe I guess what I'm trying to say is that like that sort of deconstruction of the Star Wars mythos is more interesting to me as a like larger, more pervasive twist than just like actually you were the space bad guy with amnesia, which is like it's good and in line with Star Wars type twists from the movies, like the, you know, I'm your father.
I'm your father.
But like it doesn't have that much meat on its bones.
You just
Nathan likes his twist this is, thick.
This is bullet points, guys. We're supposed to be going through these fast, and Nathan just had a treatise.
Oh, I thought we were supposed to be like
treatise.
Kind of talking about the twists after we, you know,
yes, we are actually. You're right. I'm sorry. That was the twist. Okay, so look at all the cute anime girls. Oh my God, they're killing themselves.
Madoka.
No, not Madoka.
But that's a really good show. Now you're talking about what's it called?
Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yeah,
which seemed like a cute little visual novel, and then oh my God, I still remember the first time one of them died, and I was just like, "You can't see me. I have no video on right now, but it's a really cool face I'm making."
That's actually a really great way of how a twist is revealed. Like it's most of these twists are revealed like kind of like. Not particularly like shockingly, I don't think. It's just like a little offhand things that maybe you might not notice, but like Doki Doki Literature Club was like, bam, in your face. Like, oh no, she's dead.
Yeah, no, she Holy hung shit. Herself.
Yeah. And you like come in the club room the next day and like, oh, wait a minute. It's this kind of game? Oh shit.
Yeah. So my question there, because I haven't played that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, what does the twist do outside of shock value? Because the, you know, the reputation the game has is for being very shocking. But like, what does it do with that twist?
Honestly, your best bet is to like watch a Let's Play of it, specifically the Game Grumps one, because I think it's actually really funny, but it gets way crazier or it gets way weirder than that. Like it goes down this like strange rabbit hole that just spirals out of control.
Nothing is what it seemed like initially. It's just, what the hell? And then the end of the... I don't want to spoil it, which is sad because we had a whole talk
on
about
our episode
it.
Where we have...
There's like a whole AI controlling this narrative and... Things
you have to go play with like your actual game files and shit the way that it goes.
Yeah, I had to delete some stuff in my game files to make it work. All the twists work. It was so beautiful. Unlike the following one, your dead wife will always be a part of you.
Ha. That's Bionic Commando.
It's Bionic Commando. I mean, it's our going theme is we always get to work beyond Bionic Commando.
Bionic Commando, which should have been called Arm Wife, Armageddon.
Arm Wife.
So anyway, if you've not played Bionic Commando, good for you. Moving on. Holy crap, that guy's not an assassin at all. I kind of had to give it away there.
Hitman. All of the Assassin's Creed games?
Not all of the Assassin's Creed games, specifically.
A lot of them.
Oh my God, you people. Assassin's Creed 3.
Does he turn out to not be an assassin?
It starts off with you playing Haytham Kinway, the father of the protagonist, Connor Kenway. Connor? Is that his name? I hope I'm getting that right.
I think it's Connor.
But you're starting off, the game guides you through this whole sequence where you're playing as Haytham. Who's the father of the protagonist? So you think, oh, we're playing through this assassin. We're doing a generational thing. But then it turns out all the stuff you're doing in the beginning of the game is for the Templars, the assassins, what are they called? Nemesis, the other group. And it turns out that he ends up being the bad guy of the game. And you start off playing as the bad guy.
So... I think that Assassin's Creed also like has a fundamental twist that never really worked for a lot of people.
Where none of this matters at all, they just sort of abandoned it.
What?
Where none of this matters at all. We're just looking back on history. It's all preordained.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they like, you know, the game started out being really into this whole like Dan Brown style, like, you know, globe-trotting adventure that was attached to just going back in time and like being a cool assassin. And there are people who are like super into that, but they are a very small portion of the Assassin's Creed fandom. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is like, I could take it or leave it. And so like they've sort of backed off this over time. And now the Assassin Templar stuff is like there, but very briefly. And so it's funny to me that they had this like big twist and people were like, but do we have to?
Just stick me back in the Animus and leave me there. Shit.
Just have Michael Fassbender sing to me again, as he did in the Assassin's Creed movie, where they tried to bank on all that assassin's stuff and screwed it all up.
Didn't think that was a bad movie, by the way.
Really?
But I am, I am notoriously soft on video game movies. I honestly think they're better than most people give them credit for.
No, they're not, but we'll agree that you're wrong. Okay, the final one. This is number 9 of the Bullet Points Special Twist, Bullet Twist Edition. Pew, 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 pew. Would you kindly answer this last one?
Oh, it's Bioshock.
That was actually a good twist.
Mm-hmm. It's another one of the biggest twists in games where the whole time you're like, I have free will. And then Ken Levine's like, you don't have free will at all. I'm like, Ken Levine? No. And Ken Levine's like, I'm Ken Levine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at a lot of like the biggest video game twists of all time, they play with that idea of the player's free will, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to go back to Metal Gear Solid 2 for too long, but that was also basically that game's like ending twist, is that the entire thing that you were going through, the entire mission, had been like pre-set up by the Patriots, and like every major development that happened along the way was supposed to happen.
Yeah, you had no control.
Yeah, you had no control all along. And that's like the, you know, In that game, they're making a point about like being a soldier and following orders, or being part of like a cog in a, you know, data-driven machine. In BioShock, I think it was more about like games as a medium, and like the belief that you're doing something that matters, when in reality you're just, you know, following some paths and shooting some guys.
You're just doing what Ken Levine tells you to do, you sick son of a bitch.
Yeah. The wild part is that, as I understand it, most of BioShock's story was put together in the final like 6 months or something of development.
Like, no, that doesn't make sense at all. This was a well-planned out thing.
If I remember
most
correctly.
Most of the best stuff isn't well-planned out.
Yeah.
Like this
especially
podcast.
When it comes to stories. And, but no, especially when it comes to stories in AAA video games. Because the story is such like a, again, and this really disappoints me, but it's regarded as a semi-inconsequential part of a lot of games. I think that's changing now that, you know, production values have gone through the roof and everyone's trying to make prestige television, but in game form. But for a long time, it was just like, yeah, we're in the final stretch of development. It's time to graft a story onto this set of systems we put together. And I think that was the circumstance under which BioShock's story was made.
That's,
I could be wrong.
It's just depressing to think about. I don't want to.
It's actually heartening. It's like, oh, shit, really? You don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm freaking out. And then, oh, it all clicks together. It's like heartening.
I mean, I'm not sure if Ken Levine would ever admit that he didn't know what he was doing. I remember I went to a conference one time where he like went on stage and gave a long talk about like all the history he was reading for BioShock Infinite. And then he came up with the brilliant twist that if you give power to black people, they'll turn into the bad guys. So swing and a miss there, Ken Levine. Probably shouldn't have done that one.
On that note,
yes, you've been listening to the Kotaku Split Screen podcast, but you've actually been listening to My Favorite Murder. I'm Karen Kilgraff, and
I don't know what that is.
You don't know what My Favorite Murder is? Oh, you should go listen to that podcast instead. We're going to go listen to My Favorite Murder because it is the delightful true crime podcast. For now, you've been listening to Kotaku Split Screen, or have you? You can follow us on Twitter at Uncle Fahey, that's me, at Ad Astra, A-D-A-S-T-R-A, that is Ashley Parrish, or Vahn16, V-A-H-N-16, that's Nathan Grayson. Our producer is Michaela Heck. Our sound engineer is Jamie Colazzo. And thank you so much for listening. Our producer has been Michaela Heck. Our sound engineer is Jamie Colazzo. And I wish you a fuck.
Man, you wish somebody a fuck? Wow.
I wish everybody a... Oh, God.